I'm Duncan MacLeod, and you are watching or listening to episode 4 of Everything PC. The podcast name says it all. My collaborator in this venture, Gerard Pretorius. Welcome, Gerard. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Cold?
Yeah, it's a
good.
Chilly weekend in Joburg, but yes. We're going to be talking literally about hot things today, Intel processors. Episode 2 of our series on, or our two-parter on Intel, episode 4 of the podcast. If you've missed any of them today, do go check them out. We did a double episode, our first two episodes on AMD, and our second two episodes are on Intel, two companies that are really joined at the hip, and you know, everything they do is kind of intertwined. But Intel, a fascinating company. Last week we had a look at the history of Intel and where they've come from, all the way back to the 4004 processor from the early 1970s, and how they really led the PC revolution through the 1980s and into the 1990s. How they tripped up a bit in the last decade or so. And how they're trying to get back on course now, led by a person who we're going to be speaking a lot about in this podcast, I suspect, and that's Mr. Patrick Gelsinger, who took over the reins at Intel, when was it, Gerard? About a year ago now?
Yeah, it's about a year and a bit ago now, already, that he's been in charge.
And he's making
cleaning up,
making some big decisions, spending some big money.
Yes, no, well, basically course correcting. Taking control of that rudder and then scootering it into a completely different direction. Yeah. And also way more in different areas as well, where they're going.
And that's what we're going to be unpacking in this episode. We're going to be looking very much in the last episode. We looked at the history. Today we're going to look at the present of Intel and its future, where it's going. We're going to unpack. There's lots to talk about. So let's dive right in. It's difficult to know where to start on these things. But I thought let's maybe chat about something new that Intel is doing. We know that it's done it's done on chip graphics before, but it's now doing discrete graphics. Something called the Arc graphics lineup, which are the first cards out yet, or they're still coming?
Still coming.
So imminent though.
Many delays. So let's actually start there as well. So Arc was started end of last year. So they were supposed to launch quarter one this year, which is basically at its end already. So as far as we know, we've seen images of the cards already. So we know they exist. So there is warehouse full of those cards there, but not in use.
Right.
So basically, to this point where Intel will probably launch these new GPUs closer to June, July that they'll launch. So their main fall point there was, I think, the software that really got them in a bad position. Because, again, it's the first time they're making a big GPU where they need to compete with AMD and NVIDIA's already basically market dominance and then also their knowledge as well. They've been doing drivers now for, you're looking about like at least 30, 40 years that they've been doing, not 40 years, but I would say it's about like 20 years now that you say more gaming drivers that they've been doing. So now Intel has to catch up.
It's very brave of them to get into a market that's dominated by two strong players, NVIDIA and AMD. Why do this?
Well, that's now where we're going to go now with this. Why did Intel now say we're going to make the screen graphics? So the first and obvious one is AMD.
Okay.
So AMD has APUs and they have laptop chips and OEM market. So Intel's already has a part in there, and Intel ships, funny enough, most of the GPUs. They're the biggest company that ships GPUs because every Intel chip that you buy in desktop and laptop has an Intel discrete graphics in it. But they're terrible. Right. But that's the problem. So Intel has to work on that. Now, especially now that AMD is more getting so aggressive, the advantage is they have good GPUs already. CPUs, they're now pretty much on par with Intel now. So Intel now has a disadvantage with, as soon as Intel launches something, if AMD beats them or matches them a CPU, they will beat them in graphics, which basically puts them in a backwards position. So they have to catch that up. So there's that push coming. The second push comes from, again, now AMD, from being now for the big boys where you go data centers and so forth, where they you're seeing a greater move to GPUs for data center usage. So now you need to make platforms where you've got CPUs, GPUs on the same like designs, where we've seen some of these elaborate designs where they've only really shown you like a graphics of, oh, here's one CPU and then four GPUs next to it, and they'll interconnect with one. I think nothing yet designed and so forth. But that is where stuff will lead to. So you need to now focus on making high-end GPUs. We've already seen Raja Koduri. He actually is now already Ponte Vecchio, where it's like massive GPU that they have, and then they'll later on have more of them stacked where they can connect directly to the CPU.
Mm-hmm.
Not even what we call now through PCI, but actually through their own like Infinity Fabric type of thing, where they'll connect straight to the CPU mm-hmm. for lower latency and higher bandwidth and more data throughput and so forth. So now there you need to start also now upping your game with GPUs, because that is a very lucrative market. Hence, that's the other market now, NVIDIA. NVIDIA has made a massive niche for themselves with GPUs, with AI acceleration and GPU acceleration and so forth. So I think we got to a point as well, Intel looked at this whole thing where it's like, probably like 3 years ago, it's like, yo, wow, NVIDIA is making like stupid amount of money out of GPUs. Why aren't we in that business? Why didn't we capitalize it? Why weren't we those guys that made that money?
And you just have to look at,
and now they have to,
you just have to look at NVIDIA's market value compared to Intel's. I think they're worth about 2.5 times as much. So here's the big daddy of the Chipzilla of Silicon Valley, whose market value is sitting at about 30 or 40% of the guys down the road who are making the GPUs. So I guess there's a bit of envy there as well. But I mean, why is NVIDIA so successful in the data center? What is it about its GPU technology that's translated so well into data centers?
Mainly because it's support, and mainly they were the only real guys that actually pushed it hardcore. Yeah. AMD had massive financial problems leading up to that, so AMD didn't have the money to compete. Intel, on the other hand, also just didn't feel like it, because, again, most of the market is still CPU-driven. Mm-hmm. GPUs is still a very smaller market. Again, it's a very profitable market, but it weren't 10 years ago even. GPUs in the data center wasn't that prevalent. CPUs were still... And even today, pretty much most of the stuff you do is all majority done on CPUs or data centers and all that type of jazz, and Google and Amazon and all those things. It's all done on CPUs. It's not done on GPUs. But GPUs, then, once you saw the advantages of hyperparallelization with AI acceleration and certain workflows like for chemical, for gas, those type of guys that need very highly accurate stuff that has massive data sets to go through and crunch, brute force, just number crunching. And then also that led to NVIDIA hitting a perfect one ace in the hole, basically, with CUDA, making it easy for these companies to get their software to work with the hardware. So then there was the actual main accelerator for NVIDIA, was the advent of making it easy for guys to actually utilize the hardware properly. And that's where you'll see now, when we get to a future episode with NVIDIA, we can then talk about their new Hopper stuff and all their massive GPUs and so forth that they'll bring out to accelerate those workloads. So it was, in my opinion, if I was Intel way back when, I would have also said, we need to focus on GPU hardcore. Yeah. And unfortunately, they just went, no, it costs too much money. We're already making stupid money from the current guys. What's the incentive?
So what's the bigger play here, do you think, Gerard? Do you think it's this is Intel protecting its dominance in the server data center environment, or do you think it's
against AMD? Funny enough, it's not. The problem is they're now playing a game of where will stuff be in the future? Yeah. Because in the future we're talking massive integration. Yes. I thought it was like, we're going to see later on stages where you're going to have massive, massive motherboards with like two CPUs on it. And then those CPUs will be literally surrounded by GPUs.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, once you have proper software that can parallelize everything, you can just use the GPU, because GPUs are really good at parallelization. Yep. That's what they designed to do, is to parallelize everything. So workflows that are highly lucrative to that will just fly through the roof. And that's the future, is hyper-parallelization of majority of workloads that we do. Even like when we talk about Amazon and Microsoft and so forth, when you do web browse and so forth, we've got already, that's why most of them are buying AMD CPUs at the moment, is you've got so many cores. You've got 64 cores on an AMD chip, and one of those CPUs can do so many transactions or so many calls at the same time. So that, because every time you go and add something on the cart and buy something from Amazon overseas and so forth, that you need a CPU to actually follow all of those things, and then that needs to then do the transaction and check stock needs to pull, and then all the back-end systems need to be in place to do all of that. So that's where GPUs are, and that's why you'll see main focus for NVIDIA, for Intel now at the moment, is catching up to AMD to make sure that when we get to that future where hyper data processing happens, they're there and they're not falling behind. Because again, it's a bit of a stupid race, because it's only Intel and AMD that can do this. NVIDIA can be there, but the problem is that they don't have a CPU. Yep. So again, we'll see what plans they have to try and mitigate that. But
I think
even at the moment,
they were trying to buy ARM.
Even at the moment, yes, we'll get to that when we get to the episode. But even now with NVIDIA's stack, if you buy like a server rack, it comes with two AMD EPYC chips in it.
Okay.
They do not have the whole ecosystem that they control.
Right.
So that's the only main problem with where we now go. So as we now transition to server and so forth, that is the big focus still now is CPUs, pretty much brute force in terms of massive core counts, massive cores. And there you go. There is some play you can do there that Intel has done, which we'll talk about a bit. But the big factor is still, server is still the dominant factor. And that's where most of the money sits.
And
isn't so.
What's interesting, if you look back at the history, because Pat Gelsinger was the guy who was responsible for really building Intel's presence and strength in the server chip market before he came along and worked on, I think it was the Xeon project that really built their presence in servers.
No, it's
Before that, they were actually quite weak in that space. In fact, one of the videos you shared with me ahead of this podcast made the point that right through the 1990s, the company that really dominated in servers was Sun Microsystems, and Intel only came along later.
Yeah, no, we've got IBM as well with their actual Deep Blue systems and all that jazz that still have a very hyper niche.
Yeah.
But Intel kind of made that easier for most people to get into, because in the olden days, you had to get your mainframes built, custom built for you.
Yeah.
So you had a mainframe and it had to be like that. So there were a lot of banking institutions and so forth that are very, very specific in a transaction or a certain thing needs to happen at this time, at this specific latency. That type of stuff is very still IBM's thing. Intel AMD has stuff that's similar to that, but not nearly as good as, and also probably as good, but the problem is probably not as well certified and well tested as a IBM's solution. So you'll still get these edge cases, but most of the guys where most of your profit sits is if you scale, hyperscale up with your like making quantities, because IBM doesn't really rely on quantities. They have a set amount of customers, and that's it. They make money from them, and you can kind of say milking, because it's selling just better machines of what they're currently doing. They're not really they're pioneering and revolutionizing in their own field, but that's it. That innovation doesn't really bleed out into the consumer market or our markets. So it's a very, very pinpointed view where they pioneer that area and that area alone, and that's it. And the only people that benefit is them.
Anyway, so Gerard, Intel is trying to solve a problem for itself here. But it's good that there's competition coming in the graphics market as well, because we've seen how expensive, and we know these companies will rest on their laurels if they can do so. So more competition in the space is good. But should gamers be considering buying an Intel Arc graphics card in this Gen 1 phase, or is it going to be too buggy? No.
Maybe if you want to be a beta tester, yes. But
stay away.
If you're a normal person and you want something to work, no. There is some, I would presume some of the creators might benefit quite a lot with these new NVIDIA chips, the Intel chips that are coming out.
Yeah.
Because I think that's one of the areas where Intel might pioneer a bit more that people don't expect, I think.
Right.
Is a lot of the Adobe guys and video editing guys and that type of guys still have a good relationship with Intel. So Intel can make a lot of like hardware dedicated encoders for them.
Right.
And we've seen it with Intel QuickSync and other implementations that they have, which are pretty good. Like, and it works flawlessly.
Yeah.
We've seen some of the Adobe AI stuff that they used Intel chips with and so forth. Freaking amazing. It's way quicker.
Mm.
So I think that's the funny joke of the whole thing, where if Intel does come into the market hardcore, it's more against NVIDIA than AMD, because AMD is still now predominantly gamers.
Right.
That's their market. I would assume that will evolve as we go now that AMD has the capital and they can invest in it and get better software developers and all that type of jazz. That will improve. Mm. But the only person here to lose is NVIDIA, because they already own that whole. If you are a creator, that's why even like you see laptops there, creator laptops from NVIDIA and so forth. NVIDIA has that niche, well deservingly, because they worked at their asses off do that and get the software right and all that jazz. But they're the only ones that are at big of risk of Intel getting in than AMD, actually.
I actually thought Apple was the big threat in that market, because with these new M1 chips and GPUs they're doing, I mean, they seem to be directly targeting that creative market with ProRes and all this sort of stuff.
But it's for Apple consumers. You see, again, it's a very, you cannot win over Apple consumer. Apple consumer will always buy Apple. So that you can say, due to Intel.
But you don't think PC guys are going to move to Apple?
Not that much.
No?
I've had this debate many times with people buying machines from us and so forth, with that buy and come and say, oh, I've got an Apple thing. It's like, if you're an Apple person, buy Apple.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a PC, but most of my Apple people, that's hardcore Apple people, will always eventually sell off their machine again.
Right.
Their PC machine. Because they are wholeheartedly embedded into the Apple ecosystem.
It's religion.
The problem, it's religion, but the problem is it's also they're more proficient with it.
Of course.
So at the end of the day, for any creator that comes to me and say, build me a machine and so forth, I normally make sure to them, it's like, are you 100% sure this is the right move for you? Because if you could move from one platform to another platform, you're going to end up spending more time learning the new platform and all that jazz.
Yeah.
So the same is with the GPUs. Is you're going to now learn how to use it. I've had guys also, I'm going to use my NVIDIA card or going to buy an AMD card and use the AMD card with Adobe software, and it kind of sucks. So that's the main problem there, is it depends there. I would say it's a different. We can get to that with the Apple thing. We can talk about Apple and their niches with their customers and how they have it. But for Intel at the moment, their first focus is get these GPUs out.
Mm.
Get the beta testers out so that people buy their stuff and test their GPUs. See where it breaks, because there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to break. Like DirectX 9, I don't think that's going to work that well. Again, they need to make that work with DirectX even 8.
Good grief. So, and that's been out for...
Let's go learn how to program that guys made software back in the early 1990s. So it's like these new guys that come and work for you, they probably were babies and they didn't even probably exist when that shit comes up.
Yeah.
That's now the problem with Intel has. Now they have to have all that legacy support built in as well, unless they're just going to leave it, which is also an option where they just say, if anything before DirectX 9, well, it might work. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see how it actually launches when they launch. But then their main focus is, again, with those GPUs, is the OEM market.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The OEM market, Intel again saw the money that NVIDIA made from the OEM market with laptop chips, and Intel wants some of that money. And again, AMD is the threat there again, because AMD can now go to all of these companies, Asus, HP, Dell, Lenovo, and say, we have a gaming solution here. Here's our chip. Here's the GPU. We'll give you $20 off if you buy us a kit.
Right. So this is not...
And NVIDIA can't compete with that.
This is not going to be aimed at high-end gamers, but what about casual gamers, people who want to just play a game on their PC from time to time, but they need discrete graphics because, you know, gaming is advancing and people like to see the eye candy and stuff.
I see that. The problem is that the casual gamers are going to have a bit of a problem with the software not being done yet.
Right.
Because a lot of the casual games are old. It's League of Legends, Dota, all of those stuff. You're looking at about, most of them are DirectX 9 titles. And that's not going to work from what I can understand and from what I can kind of predict. Now, again, I don't have the GPU to test and so forth.
Yeah.
But you can see from Intel's current iGPUs and so forth, their weakness has always been the old APIs. So DirectX 11 and 10, they're actually not too bad. You can actually play competently with it for what it is. But as soon as it's DirectX 9 and so forth and before, it just completely
falls. So it's a compatibility issue with older software. It's not, the latest games may actually play better, is what you're saying.
Yes. Now, okay. So if you're doing DirectX 12, I think it will be better with DirectX 12. It will also be hit and miss with the game because it depends on how the game is coded and how reliant is it on this and that and all that type of jazz. So there's a lot of stuff that they'll have to re-engineer and figure out themselves, because some of the stuff they can't just copy Intel, copy AMD and NVIDIA, because they'll just get sued. So you'll have to literally like, okay, we know how they do it. We kind of see how they do it. We just need to do it in a way that we can't get sued.
So how long is it going to take Intel to get there? I mean, are they going to be a real competitor to NVIDIA and AMD at some point?
I would say it's probably going to improve considerably with the next generation. So when we get to Battle Mage, so that will probably solve a lot of the issues.
Yeah.
And then I think probably normally I tell people it's going to be about in the third or fourth range when they launch those cards. I think then we'll see them. Again, the advantage with that is time has also then moved on. So most of the games that are reliant on the older APIs would be pushed out and all that jazz. So you have that advantage of software is evolving now with you.
Yeah.
So then it's easier to basically compete and catch up, and then there you go.
Yeah.
So that's the main focus. So I think next year, I think it will improve considerably. And the year after that, then I can say, sweet, now we can look. Then I would say that's the big threat that both AMD and NVIDIA need to look at, is because what is their long-term plans? And they have aggressive plans. Mm-hmm. It's not as if they're going to sit here and they're actually trying to compete with AMD and NVIDIA. And not sitting here. They've got good guys. They've hired a lot of guys they've hired guys from AMD. They've hired guys from NVIDIA themselves even. So they have good guys. They're working for them. So they are, it's purely a money problem and having the right people in the right places. And as far as I can see, they are getting to a point where they do have the right people in the right places.
Is Intel making,
now it's just time.
Is Intel making these ARC chips themselves, or are they,
yes.
I'd heard a rumor that were actually going to be manufactured by TSMC. Yes.
So now, okay, there's a mix. So the discrete cards are going to be manufactured by someone else. So
TSMC.
Because there's going to, so TSMC will make majority of those cards. Purely because Intel doesn't have the capacity to make them, even if they wanted to.
Amazing.
They are so busy making normal laptop chips and CPUs and so forth. I don't think they have the space for it. The other advantage is they're going with 6 nanometer, which is very cheap and easy to mass produce. That's probably the sore point as well. One would say it's probably cheaper for them to use someone else than themselves.
Yeah.
It's just probably going to be a hard one to admit, but that's all. I assume it's also playing to that as well. Mm-hmm. It's because it's cheaper. It would be easier to work with them because it's easier to implement and mass produce it by someone else than use it internally, because the internal structure has a lot of restructuring that needs to happen. I think from how I can read the room and how they chat, I think there's a lot of internal conflict still with the manufacturing side of Intel that they need to get rid of people that are in their way because they either being traditional or old-fashioned.
So when are we going to see these graphics cards? I mean, I'm quite keen to play one, even if it is crap, just to see what it looks like.
Yes, you're looking, yeah, I would say probably quarter three.
Okay.
That's probably well next.
So almost around the same time that NVIDIA is going to roll out the 4000 series and AMD is going to roll out its next series as well.
Yes, that was a bit of a problem. So that's a bit of a, like, again, they might be cheap. Because I doubt NVIDIA and AMD are going to launch their cheapest cards end of this year.
Yeah.
So NVIDIA might come in here and say, hey, we've got cheap cards. Might not work great, but at least it's cheap.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which is something in this market, looking at how GPU pricing
is
gone.
It's at least a cheap card. Yeah.
So, well, I'm so happy to see GPU prices coming down. Even this week, I've noticed the prices have dropped another 10-20%.
No, GPUs have no...
Yeah.
I told other customers that came into our stores, you know what? I can actually sell you 3070s and 3080 for the same price we sold it to when we launched them a year and a half ago.
Progress.
Well, of a kind. You can't really say progress. It's we are back to where we started.
Yeah.
We are now back at the starting point. Yeah. We can get the gun out and say, poof, we can start again. And we're starting just in time for the new ones to come out. So I'm like, well, we're going to run around and just hit the wall again. Come on.
All right, let's switch tack a little bit. Let's stay in the server space and just talk about how Intel's doing there. Obviously, their big CPU in servers is Xeon, the Xeon line. What's the roadmap looking like for Xeon? Where are we going with that? How's Intel doing?
At the moment, they're doing something, but nobody really cares.
Really?
That's basically the honest opinion from most people. It's just like, we don't really care. At the moment, AMD is the hot man.
Right.
Everybody wants their stuff now.
Okay.
And that's why AMD's been pumping out epic chips like, I don't know. They're pumping out like AMD's pumping out AMD epic chips. That's basically how you can relate. Because AMD, even if you look at their financials, they've made stupid amount of chips. Like, and so many that they've actually nerfed some of the consumer manufacturing to make more server chips.
Right.
Again, smart move because the profit margins are way higher. Unfortunately, it's been very disappointing actually with Intel, where Intel has a roadmap. So let's take it for what they have available now, because most of the stuff that's coming is only really coming end of this year. So at the moment, the best Intel chip you can buy is like a 40 core CPU from Intel now at the moment that you can buy. And very hot, very power hungry. Doesn't have a lot of PCI Express 4 lanes. IO is very limiting. And the performance is terrible.
Right.
Compared to AMD.
Let's talk about what they're doing here. I mean, we've got the Xeon processor roadmap on the screen here. We've got Sierra Forest coming next year. There's a big focus on efficiency cores. Is this all catching up to AMD? How important is this? I mean, obviously, data center operators are trying to reduce their electricity bills. Is this going to help them do that? Is there going to be demand for these chips?
Yes. So what we're going to start seeing when we get into the server market is you'll see a breakpoint happen, where we're going to have CPUs that are focused at high performance and CPUs that are focused at what I would now class as clustered core architectures. So it's specifically, like, this has been actually a main focus of ARM chips now, where you see a lot of these data centers that have ARM chips that are like 32 and 64 cores on them, and some of them are pushing like 100 and something cores on ARM architecture. So for specifically just because they're doing very simple transaction type of things. You don't need anything complex and high end to do that. So you'd rather have something that's very power efficient at doing it. So now I think AMD and Intel are actually going into that market as well with their own architecture and designs and so forth. But now the main focus is now basically SAPA represents their first, I would say, proper trying to compete against AMD. I think they'll probably lose majority of the battle still, but there will be some niches where Sapphire Rapids will still be sold to certain clientele that will benefit from having a massive die. Because, again, it's massively complicated. So Intel's running into a massive problem where to manufacture the Intel chip is probably going to cost them four times as much as what it costs AMD to make an EPIC chip.
Wow.
Which is, because again, it is horrendously difficult because you've now have four dies that you now have on your substrate, And then you've got your IO die, what is it now called again? So basically on the substrate, they have to now have to tile those four CPU clusters together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to link all of those four together. So the manufacturing from that is stupendously complex.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's one of my areas where I'm like, I don't think Intel has had enough iteration to make that cheap. They're trying to leap too quickly from one thing to a whole new innovating way. It's a whole new connection type, whole new CPU architecture, a whole new interconnect design. So it's very difficult to do that as a company when you make all those facets massively different. Which you can actually see with AMD, how even if you look at AMD's history and so forth, even with Survey, everything is based off iteration and improving iteration and then taking one facet, improving that majority, and then mass producing, selling it, and then slowly but surely improving everything so that you don't get to a point where you need to make a chip and it's fundamentally new. Because then it's easier to make mock-ups and faults and so forth. And we've seen that because Sapphire Rapids was supposed to launch, I think, last year. It's still delayed.
Mm-hmm. I see this article says it will be coming in Q1 2022, but it's still not out, is it?
It's still not out. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So Intel, again, as far as I know, Sapphire Rapids was meant to launch last year, beginning. It's almost delayed by 2 years now. That's my problem with Intel, and it's because they're trying to do too many new things at the same time. And they weren't pioneers in any of those fields, in my personal opinion.
Is this
AMD pioneered chiplets?
Is this all to do with the previous management team, or is some of this on Pat Gelsinger's head?
No. This is poor Pat being thrown over the freaking fence here because you now need to fix all of the previous people's ignorant and ignorous problems that they had.
Right.
Because a lot of them just ignore problems and
how does he fix it? How does he fix this?
Well, basically, doing what he's doing now, I would say Intel has especially Pat, has a big battle to do, especially now with normal servers, to get this fixed. I think my honest opinion, there's no way to fix this. They have to out-innovate themselves out of this now. They have to literally go bear with what they have now, make it work, and then wait until we get to our whole new designs. Which are coming, but I think that's only in 2025 and 6 that those are coming.
Is this the Sierra Forest designs you're talking about or something further into the future?
Yeah, it's evolved from those. Sierra Forest is the E-core version that they do,
okay.
The cluster core architectures.
Okay.
But it's basically, I would say in that same time period, I think Intel will, and you'll see that with desktop as well,
yeah.
That Intel's going to make massive changes in terms of how the core even sit.
Mm.
Because at the moment, even if we're now going to Sapphire Rapids, that's a 56-core. AMD is launching their Genoa. I don't know if you want to show the leak or any stuff. Honkers of a chip from AMD there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing has 12-channel memory. It's 96 cores of Zen 4 cores that will be on there. I think there's no way in hell that Intel can even come close to that chip, even with Sapphire Rapids.
Right. Is this what we're talking about here? Epic Genoa CPU?
Yes, you can scroll a bit down and so forth. I think, just check and see. I think it is, yeah, scroll a bit further down and so forth. I don't know if they've got the photo there of the actual die. Yes, you can see how colossal that is.
That is massive.
That will have now, that is now running basically. It's now going to be 12. Yeah, it's going to be 12 AMD 8-core chiplets. That's there.
Wow, that's massive.
So it's massive, and the I/O is also going to be massive. It's 12 channels.
Yeah,
you can run what? Oh, we'll see with DDR5, but I presume we'll probably see sections going up easily to 4 terabytes worth of memory on it.
Good grief!
We're getting to a point where the memory uses more power than the CPU.
That's amazing.
Because one DIMM is already taking 1.1 volt, and now you've got 24 of them.
Incredible. Incredible. So heading into mainframe territory, actually. That sort of
this is past mainframe. So this is now, like, I think even most high-end people are looking at this and saying, this is just stupid. Because it's like, as we go back to now with now AMD bringing out V-Cache that they launched quite frequently. I know, what's his name again now?
The chap whose name you couldn't remember earlier as
Level
well.
Level 1 Tex. Yeah, Level 1 Tex. He did a massively good video on actual the AMD chip and how now with V-Cache we actually have more L3 cache memory on the actual chips.
Right.
You can get to a point where now you can scale something and you get more than 100% performance.
I think this is the website you wanted up a bit earlier.
There you can see it. So that one only now has 12 channels, but I think there's another socket that they're not showing you next to it. So each socket now can have 12 channels. There is a proper picture for someone that's just memory bound. So you'll see 12 on one side, 12 on the other side. And then you'll see there's the actual CPU. I don't really give you a proper picture because you'll see it's actually top right, top left there and top right. You'll see some of the memory VRMs and so forth. And then you'll see there's a SoC voltage, there's a CPU voltage at the top and at the bottom of it. And then there's VDIO, so that's IO power and so forth. So these are massively complex chips that I'm making. And again, these things are going to be stupid fast. I think the server dudes and data guys and guys that do high-end data crunching and fluid dynamics and air dynamics type of stuff and so forth, they are going to have amazing performance increases with these chips.
Will this work in the workstation market as well?
We'll see. I presume they'll, again, that's Threadripper. So we'll probably see, I don't think this year, but we'll probably see maybe end of next year, they might bring Genoa to Threadripper. Again, that will depend on what they're planning for desktop in terms of AM4 socket and how they're going to change the AM5 socket and see how they're going to evolve there. But I would not be surprised if AMD brings out a Genoa Threadripper socket and say, yeah, sweet. Use these systems in now Disney and all these guys can have customizable PCs that they can have on site with these things on there. Because I know a lot of the things that with Lenovo has sold a lot of them as well. Like sold so many that they sold out with Threadripper machines that they do pro, semi-professional and so forth instead of having it as server sockets. So there's a big market for that where I think bigger than expected for most of these guys. And the advantage with that is you don't have to refresh it that often. Even now with Threadripper, but there's only now, I think it's only been launched like a month and a bit ago, AMD the newer Threadripper with AMD, with Zen, the newer version that now takes, I think it's now 8-channel, no? Yeah, it is 8-channel memory and so forth as well now. With the new socket and so forth, with Zen 4 and all that jazz in there. So, Threadripper allows you to scale out a bit more and you don't have to refresh every year. You can do that every 2 years and then you can go. Because, again, AMD has advantage. What do they compete against? There's nothing. When last did you see an X99 platform, or X299 from Intel? They've not had anything for many years now. So I'm a bit disappointed with Intel. I have a feeling that they'll have something in the next 2 years to compete again in that market. But at the moment, I'm very disappointed.
Well, let's talk about the consumer space because there's a lot happening there as well. Consumer PCs. We mentioned in the last podcast that there hasn't been a lot of innovation from Intel in processor designs for a long time. 5 to 10% performance improvement generation on generation, if you're lucky. And I think I said mentioned last week, Gerard, that it actually reached a point that I didn't really care what core version or generation I had in my PC. It was if it was Core 6 or Core 7 or Core 8, who cares? But it's starting to change. The market is getting more competitive again. AMD, as you've said before, is driving a lot of that. Intel is gearing up for a much more competitive future in desktop class CPUs. The 12th generation, of course, is out, but they've thrown a lot of power at it, right, to resolve some competitive challenges that they've had relative to AMD.
Yes, it's now an interesting battle here because you've got 12th gen has come out with your now 8P cores, and then there's now 8E cores with the top i9 spec. So Intel's 12th gen is, again, you can see Pat just like getting the engineers knowing, we know we have a problem. How can we still be competitive knowing our issues?
Mm.
And this is what we got. Because again, this was all designed under the previous administration. This is not Pat. Pat didn't have enough time to make 12th gen.
His first core processor that he'll be responsible for is the 14th gen, right?
Yeah.
Because these things are designed years in advance. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, you're looking at least 5 years in advance before it gets to existence. So that's what the build's like. You're looking at 14th gen, 15th gen, thereabout. Then you'll start seeing his actual influence in these things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, and again, I kind of feel for the guy. You kind of have to make something that you can sell. And this is also my concerning point where with 12th gen now, you still have a lot of issues with teething. Where I've now built a lot of machines with 12th gen in it because it is, the CPUs are well priced. That I'll give Intel.
Okay.
But the motherboards are not that well priced. DDR5 is stupendously expensive. It's getting better now, but it's, you're looking at least easily at 50 to 100% more than DDR4. It's kind of stupid actually where you pay, you can buy a 16 gig stick for DDR4 for like $2,500 and then to buy a 16 gig from DDR5, you're talking about $4,000, $5,000.
Sure. And is it a new, does this 12th generation use a new socket? Yes. Okay.
Yes. Now, so we've got new socket, new everything because again, now you've got e-cores that, you need to have more pins because there's more stuff that need communication.
Yeah.
So the socket had to change. That now leads to new coolers, which is, you can see AMD's advantage here when they designed AM4. They kind of like knew, okay, we need to predict where this is going. So that's why with AM4 and AM5, the socket stays the same in terms of cooler compatibility.
Right.
The socket is still changing in terms of like how the pins connect, but your cooling requirements is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier for the coolers where they can go, okay, sweet. We know exactly the physical size. It's still the same. The mounting mechanism is still the same. The holes where they're positioned is the same.
Right.
Because AMD's pretty much already predicted where they're going, which is good and smart.
Mm-hmm.
So Intel, at least at some point, Intel had to change because the size for their socket was just too small. So eventually they had to go bigger.
So let's have a look at this graph here from this website, techpowerup.com. What are we looking at here? I mean, this, just looking at this as a layman, I'm seeing core processors chowing a large amount of electricity. So, is that what I'm reading?
So
here?
Basically, so for these first four graphs, it's basically the lower the better. So you literally look at, you can see AMD is pretty much at the top the whole time. So as soon as you do anything high in task, the amount of power Intel needs to use to do a job.
Yeah.
Is way more than the AMD. So yes, it is faster, but the amount of power it consumes to do that is a lot more than what AMD does.
So just walk me through these processes. I know that Core i9-12900K, which chews 56 watts when idle, which is fairly comparable to the Ryzen processors, actually. But then you go into these other chips, the Core i7-11700, that's an 11th gen processor. But the 12900K, what is the difference between the K, the KS, and the KS? That's an overclocked chip.
The KS is just the super variant. So that's the special edition that's even more tuned and can overclock even more.
Oh, I see.
So if you just take the normal K version, even there, when you look at those graphs, NVIDIA, Intel is quicker. The problem is now, how much quicker is it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's my problem with, because even that chip at 5.2 gigahertz, it's consuming 144 watts at a single thread.
Mm.
So we're not even doing multitasking.
Mm.
So once we go down and we do power consumption in terms of a stress test where you're now pushing the chip to its limit, even if you look at the 12900K, the normal version, 350 watt.
Yeah, that's a lot of electricity.
AMD 16 core. AMD 16 core is sitting at just under 200 watts.
Mm.
So AMD has 16 P cores going up against 8 E cores and 8 P cores. So AMD's 16 P cores are more efficient than the whole processor.
Yeah. So Intel is Intel winning this processor round by destroying the planet, in short?
Yes. They are doing the traditional thing of putting foot down if you're too slow and can't keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Just give it more juice and we will make it win.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go down there, if you scroll down and so forth, the thing that really puts the head and nail there, if you're looking at energy usage, multi-threaded, and they actually give you per kilojoule that it uses, you can see the AMD sitting at 6.4 kilojoule used. And then you look all the way up there, Intel needs almost double the amount of power. If you're going to KS, if you're just looking at the K, the K is 10. So it's almost 4 kilojoules more per transaction.
That's pretty shocking. That's something that has to change. I mean, this is not a long-term winning strategy.
What is more concerning is this is Intel fighting a two-year-old chip.
Mm.
It's not even a new chip.
Mm.
You are fighting a chip that has an AMD 12 nanometer I/O die that's not very power efficient at all, and 2 8-core chiplets.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, this is not good.
And those chiplets are manufactured at 7 nanometer, are they, or lower?
Yeah.
7. Okay.
So again, Intel has an advantage because theirs is on their own version of 10 nanometer, which they've renamed
7
nanometer. But even with AMD having a deficit of the I/O die, so the thing that does all your I/O, the PCI Express and all that jazz, because again, I told you, it's on 12 nanometer.
Yeah.
Not on 7, not on 6, on 12 nanometer made by GlobalFoundries. That thing is not power efficient at all. That thing sucks.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming from me.
Mm-hmm.
Even I can criticize AMD and say the I/O die is pretty terrible. Mm-hmm. Again, they didn't have a choice. It's one of those things where they had to do that for other reasons. But then, even then, you can, like, even with that deficit from AMD, they can still beat Intel.
Does this change? Does this change? Sorry, Gerard, to interrupt there, but does this change with 13th generation, or does the problem continue?
I don't think so. Again, 13th generation is just the iteration of 12th gen.
Mm.
So they can only make it a bit more power efficient. And then what we see now, what they're doing is they're just adding more E-cores.
Right.
So you're going to have now 16 E-cores and 8 P-cores. I'm like, well, okay, you're just brute forcing the fix now. Mm-hmm. Because if AMD makes their cores, for argument's sake, 25 or 30% faster, the only way Intel can beat in multitask, multi-threaded applications is just have more E-cores.
Mm.
So this is already pinpointing to me that Intel has a massive problem with the performance cores. So the actual core architecture, there is a problem there.
Do we know anything about the 14th generation Intel processors at this stage, the ones that Pat Gelsinger is getting?
They're playing the cards very tight to their chests.
Right.
I don't think – I've tried to check the rumor mills, and I can't get anything concrete there. But from what I know, it is a drastic change.
Okay.
Like, and this
which is all, what they need.
This is all going to get thrown out. Like, literally, 12th and 13th gen is just a stopgate. Literally, the boat is full of holes, and we're just using it, plugs and plugging it. We're not fixing the ship. We're just plugging the holes now.
Mm, mm.
So it doesn't look too bad.
Yeah.
And my problem is where this gets worse for me is we've now seen AMD launch their 6th gen APUs for laptops. And it's, in my opinion, embarrassing compared to Intel. Like, you can have Intel chips. Even if you compare the Intel chips now, they do beat the Apple chips now, and they beat AMD chips. But the amount of power they use to beat them is just stupid.
Which makes no sense in a laptop.
Well, that's not my problem. That's why, even if you go now and look, where is all the 12th-gen laptops? They're all in these massive brick-sized laptops with high-end NVIDIA cards in them.
Massive batteries.
Which is all nice and well, desktop replacements and so forth.
Yeah.
But the thing juices, as soon as you get into like the 20 to 35 watt and below usage, they just suck.
Mm.
The AMD ones beat them even though the single-core performance AMD chip is weaker, it still beats it because it can, at that power usage, the AMD one is more efficient and can do more stuff within that power envelope than Intel can. So that already tells me there's a fundamental power issue with Intel's chip where it can't scale.
So,
my problem now going to, sorry to interrupt you there.
No.
That's my problem now leading into the laptops is a lot of the other laptops stack is now, you're going to see the consumer range.
Mm.
You're going to have AMD with 8 cores and 16 threads going up against, 4 cores and 4 E cores.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is a battle that they're going to lose badly with laptops in the 15 and 35 watt, which is the biggest markets. Mm. The gaming market isn't
big.
It's puny.
Yeah, yeah.
The consumer market is hundreds of millions units that get shipped.
And the business market, the business market.
It's business to business. It's normal consumer. It's a laptop you can go walk into Macro and buy, and your ZenBook and your XPS and your Envy, all those things are all 15 watt to 25 watt, maybe 35 watt units. Mm-hmm. They don't have discrete graphics. Those are the units that sell the most and are the most sought after because they're thin, light, 14 cheap. Inch, 13 inch units. Mm. That type of units sell the most. And Intel in that market, what they have to get, what they are fighting against with AMD is, in my opinion, looks terrible from Intel. Because Intel's 15 watt, even more deplorable. It's a two P cores and four E cores.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what? How are you going to fight AMD with eight P cores? It's literally the same performance you get with the high-end gaming laptops.
Yeah.
They can't win there. So, and that's how drastic they had to cut the actual chip to make it fit in a 15-watt power envelope.
What do you think?
It still has eight cores.
What do you think the Intel 14th generation chips are going to have to look like if they're going to be competitive with AMD?
They'll have to completely redo the whole architecture.
How?
Like what AMD did.
Yeah.
You have to redo everything. Like 99% of the core architecture, you have to, the I series and I core series needs to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the chips that they're still doing are inherent chips that they have inherited all those chips.
Right.
You can trace 12 generations core architecture stuff straight all the way back to 2017.
So do you think that's coming? Do you think we're at the end of the line for the core processor range?
Yeah. I think the core series as is now needs to end. Intel cannot use the same architecture for more than 15 years now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just not realistic.
Yeah.
That's not going from it starts 2007. So its core architecture started 2007 all the way up to now.
Mm.
You can't. That's just, you have to do what AMD did. And that's why AMD is now winning a lot of their stuff is basically they redid the whole core architecture, stripped all the old stuff that you don't really need.
Mm.
I've already had rumors ages ago. This is now like 3 or 4 years ago that there were already pushes internally from Intel where they want to go and say, we want to start removing the old instruction sets that people might still use, but no modern day thing uses that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
We want to strip all of those out because if we do strip that out, we can make our CPU like 10-15% smaller. Just stripping all the stuff out that maybe 1-2% of the customer base uses.
Yeah. Yeah. So what else? What are some of those things? I mean, what impact would it have on backward compatibility?
It's just super legacy programs. So programs that are very specifically written to certain languages that are from those eras.
Okay.
So it's very specific. Most modern day languages are on SEEE 4.1 and 3.1, I think it's called, and AVX and AVX1, AVX2. We've got AVX512 as well. So most of the modern day stuff we have now and so forth are all written in codes from SEEE and I think it's SEEE or something like that. And then AVX, which is the more popular one that a lot of people are starting to use, AVX1, AVX2. Yeah. So that's the problem with Intel trying to, because they haven't really spent a lot of money to re-engineer the wheel. That's what Intel needs to do. And they have. Mm-hmm. So they have done it. It's just, it takes a while for that to actually happen. Yeah. So ironically, one of the guys that actually helped Intel is the guy that helped AMD with their Zen architecture. So you can kind of see now Intel needs to completely redo their architecture. And that's coming, but at the moment it is pretty, pretty disappointing because that now leads into the two philosophies we have now at the moment.
Yeah.
Is we've got Intel doing the P cores and E cores thing, and AMD saying, let's make our P cores basically E cores when we need to.
Mm-hmm.
Which is better for die space because Intel now has running into a problem where you now need to make your core bigger and bigger and bigger because you have to have a lot of these small cores and then the big ones. where AMD is trying to like say, okay, let's make the P cores as power efficient as possible.
Yeah.
So now you've got Intel going on all these weird methods and trying to evade the problem and not actually fixing the problem, which is our core architecture is just too old.
Mm.
It's now buckling under the weight of all of the stuff.
How long has the Zen architecture been around for now?
Well, Zen has now been around since 2017. That was now Zen 1.
Right.
But AMD's also now, there's been interrupts on it, and they've also changed a lot of it as well, as they change. So comparing what we have now, Zen 3 architecture, the current 5000 series, with Zen 1, there's massive differences between the two.
Okay.
You can see there's a lot of stuff that's been used, but I would say probably about, they're probably using about 70% and 30% of it is new.
Mm.
If I have to give it a figure quickly, that's how big of a change is it. So AMD has been better to evolve the chip more aggressively, whereas Intel is trying to just use the same chip and trying to just make it better. And then you need to somehow revolutionize in the chip itself. You cannot just use the same architecture and just add to it and try and make an improvement to it.
Mm-hmm.
You need to eventually just trim the fat and make it more efficient in that sense.
So Pat Gelsinger has a lot on his plate.
He has a lot on his plate.
Including a lot of cash. I don't know if you saw his payout this week.
No, of course. Well, everything is riding on this guy to know what he's doing. Pat messes this up, Intel is in huge problems.
Yeah.
I told you, this is the big problem I have now. If Pat needs to make sure this works.
This is make or break.
It doesn't. Then we can sit in a point where it's like AMD, like 10 years without Intel being here. They'll be there, but not competing in the high end or anything. And that's not
that's not good for the industry. I don't
think Intel, the problem is Intel's too expensive to run. They are over reliant on making the money they do, because owning fabs ain't cheap. Yeah. Only the amount of people that they have and the employees that they have to pay, that's not cheap.
And they're making big commitments on more fabs. They're spending $20 billion, I think, in Europe alone on new fabrication plants. That's serious commitment, and that's a big bet on the future, and that this guy and his team, the team around him, are going to get this right.
Yeah, no, all. That's what we hope for. My side, I'm also hoping Intel, Intel is, especially under Pat, if the right people are in positions, they can do amazing things.
Yeah.
They can.
Yeah.
It's just the problem is they need to get rid of all the management people that are in their way.
Let the engineers run the place.
Easy money. It needs to go back to its roots.
Yeah.
Go to the guys that are eager to make faster and better chips. They are eager. They want to do better. They want to make faster.
Yeah.
Again, you can just look at AMD. AMD's come out every year in the beginning of the year saying, okay, we'll make our chips 50%. Every time that's one thing I'll give AMD kudos with. They come out, they say, here's our targets. And every time they say, here's our target, they've hit it.
Yeah.
More accurately than both NVIDIA and Intel.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the tech industry, it's now very rare for people to come out and say, here's our target, we're going to do it. And it's like, and the targets they're placing AMD is not small targets. It's 20-30% increases on CPU architectures. That's 50% more performance on GPUs. So Intel has to now put foot and not even try and let off. Intel has no chance to let off. If they let off once, they're screwed for 2-3 years.
Wow.
So
make or break time. Very, very, very interesting to see how this unfolds next year. It makes it for a very exciting industry going forward.
14th gen is going to be a real eye opener to see and see what has Pat and what have the high end engineers been able to.
Because when are we likely to hear more on that?
I think we'll probably hear about more about that next year.
I don't think we'll hear
about that, because 13th gen is only launching end of this year.
Right.
So I think at the moment their main focus is now to get what they have and make it still good-ish.
Yeah. Does it make...
Not,
Does it make sense to be doing a new generation every year? I mean, it seems like it's almost like if you look at the Apple iPhone and the Samsung Galaxy series, it's almost the changes each year have become iterative. And I almost wonder, does it make sense to do this every year? And the same applies in the chip industry. Should Intel be doing a new core process every 12 months?
Well, the problem is this is of their own making.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were Intel. This is still leftovers from the TikTok cycle.
Okay.
Where they would tick, innovate, all those things, talk, sweet, start improvement, tweaking, and then TikTok, and that's how you go.
Yeah.
So, again, they now pretty much Intel's derailed that poor TikTok into its ground, so that doesn't really exist anymore. You can kind of say AMD's probably done a better job at that TikTok cycle than Intel has done for the past 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's kind of sad. So, the main other point of those cycles is purely to make it easier in one sense. And again, you can say there's some profiteering on that because it makes it easier to go through cycles. So
right.
Intel will keep a socket basically or compatibility in that socket range for 2 years.
Okay.
So you'll launch a chip. Next year, there's a new chip coming out. And then the year after that, basically in that cycle, now 2 year cycle, then that platform ends, and then you get the new socket, which you'll require to buy a new chip and a new board and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you kind of force customers then to, when their board dies, in that if they have a first-gen board and their board then dies in, like, 2 years, they kind of have to then buy a new board and a chip. So then you can do double dipping, which is kind of nasty in one sense, but you can see where it's like, well, of course, the motherboard vendors will say, go for it, because then they turn over with motherboards, so it's great, which they're happy with. Intel's happy because they sell more CPUs then. So who loses there? You, the consumer. And again, they don't care about you as the consumer anymore. So that's where that comes from. That's why Intel started that all the way back when, is to make that the cycle. And then the other thing that they would do is the price wouldn't get cheaper. So the old board, if you want to buy the old board, 3 years later, it's going to cost you the same money, buy that board than the new board. So then it's like, again, but what's the incentive to buy the old board then if the new board's the same price? And then you see, there you go. Now you have to buy a new chip again. Bazinga, we've got money.
Forcing consumer behavior to benefit your bottom line. Yeah.
Exactly. You're literally printing more money.
I am shocked. I'm absolutely shocked. These capitalists, what will they do next?
Well, it's genius on one side. I'll give them that. It's like, you have pretty much, it's up to governments and all those things to wipe that down. It's not their fault. They're just looking and see what they can export and export. You can say it's bad manners to do that. By all means, you can criticize them as company. Again, this is Intel. It's not as if this is the worst thing they've ever done.
Yeah.
So, again, Intel can get away with this, and it's just, but we've always done this now. So, I would prefer them to do what AMD did, where it's try. In my personal opinion, I would rather prefer to have a 4 year cycle.
Yes.
You make a motherboard, keep it for 4 years, and then the fifth year you change.
Yeah.
If we can move to something that's maybe every 3 or 4 years, that's generally, I would say, probably the best, where we can say, you guys are engineers. You should be able to know what you're doing for the next 5 years. Just make sure your motherboard and the socket will last for 5 years. Come on. It is difficult by all means, and it's going to cost you as a company more money.
Yes.
The company is going to take a bullet there. But I'll rather do that, because then it just makes the whole ecosystem a bit more flushed out.
Again,
we can see it is possible because AMD did it. The guy that has less money than both NVIDIA and Intel, somehow they can do it, but the two guys that have a lot of money, again, we'll exclude NVIDIA there, but Intel has a lot more money. Why don't they do that? And you can see the reason why they're so rich is because they know how to get every penny.
To put it politely, I want to talk about ARM and Apple Silicon. How much of a threat is this to Intel, and should Pat Gelsinger be losing sleep about this?
I would say in one period, not that much, because Apple is only a threat to other manufacturers in terms of or product people that make products like laptops and desktops and so forth. Because Apple Intel will still sell their chips and sell them out because you still have HP and Dell and Lenovo and Asus and Acer, Gigabyte, all those guys buying Intel and AMD stuff.
Right.
So in terms of Intel's threat, in terms of money, it's not that big of a threat. You can say in terms of maybe in terms of image, there's probably more of an image damage than an actual financial damage there. Because again, Apple was very aggressive how they actually, in terms of how they allocated and got stock from Intel. So mm-hmm. I would say at some point, it will probably more, Intel probably made more money selling those chips to someone else than selling it to Apple. Because Apple was normally very dictatory with, we want the cheapest price.
I'm sure, but they, I mean, I'm sure they squeeze all of their suppliers. I mean, Tim Cook is known as the supply chain king. Yes. And it's one of the reasons Apple is so successful is because they know how to work the supply chain and put pressure on the suppliers.
Supply. So the problem is that becomes a bit of a, you need to play that tune very nice, because if you don't make enough money, again, like you can piss off your customer and then Intel just walks away. Because again, luckily, no other company has that advantage where they can just walk away from Intel.
Mm.
You can't see Gigabyte and Asus and some of the big guys walk away from Intel. That would be suicide.
Yes.
Instant suicide for them. So again, it's Intel is in their own position of, they are not a hardware company anymore. They are a software company. Again, you will have to look at the figures, but I've got a feeling if you look at the figures, majority of the money they're making comes from software, not from hardware.
Intel.
So, no, Apple.
Apple, I beg your pardon. Sorry,
Apple is not a hardware company.
Sure.
You would think so, because they make a lot of hardware and so forth, and they make the iPhone and so forth, but their hardware is there to facilitate the sale of their software.
Services.
And the ecosystem of the software. Which brings you in a bit of a trouble, because now, again, Apple, again, with having all that money, they intelligently knew the problem if they're going to alienate themselves from everyone. Because at the moment, the only real company that helps them with their design is TSMC.
Mm-hmm.
Apple also, AMD also helped Apple at some point with their stuff and so forth, with GPUs and so forth. And again, there was a big, when we do an Apple thing, we can talk about the Apple and NVIDIA debacle, which was, that was an explosion of note.
I don't know that bit of history, but let's save it for episode 6.
It's a very interesting one, and one of those areas where when two arrogant people meet one another, there is always going to be an explosion. There is no, it's one of those areas. It's the same with Intel and Apple, basically what happened.
Yeah.
You had those two arrogant where Intel said, no, we will do this, and Apple, no, but you need to make more power efficient stuff. And the two heads just smashed against one another. And eventually the one gave in and said, okay, goodbye. Mm-hmm. We'll make our own chips now because we can't rely on you for a bit. And then Apple went and did their own thing, which was great in one way, weak for Intel on the other hand, but that's where we are. We all benefit from that because that does also give Intel's biggest competitor in manufacturing more money, because now Apple has to go to one company and buy everything from them. So kind of Intel's own fault there for basically not losing money, but basically giving money to their competitor to make it easier for the competitor to match them and beat them.
Apple has done very well in taking the ARM design and turning it into a powerful desktop and power-efficient desktop processor.
They've evolved that thing massively. It still has the same fundamental fault, in my opinion, where it has the big light architecture, where you've got the big cores doing the big things, and then they go into idle. So, again, that's problems that they've inherited from ARM.
Sure.
So, again, Apple needs to go, in my opinion, also, in the coming years, especially with AMD now rapidly innovating their core architecture and so forth, in a couple of years, Apple needs to completely fundamentally change how ARM works. Which is going to be very difficult for Apple. Apple doesn't have that expertise as of yet, from what I can see.
They've done very well so far, and they've got a lot of money.
But, yes, problem is, money doesn't always buy you proper talent. And the problem is, most of their talent now, especially with ARM, most of it's bought by ARM. So they are reliant on ARM improving their architecture.
Yeah.
Too, as well. So they are over-reliant on ARM doing it. So And haven't seen where I can see Apple spending a lot of money on ARM to get ARM to be a bit better. I haven't seen that. And that's my biggest problem there. Again, that's now, and again, they're playing to ARM's advantages. We need to remember that as well. Apple's been very intelligent on how it gets its software to optimize to make sure all the weak points of ARM get removed or negated as best as possible. Because there is some hard ways you can break an Apple chip now, where it just completely falls apart with certain software.
It's been interesting to see how Apple has taken the ARM designs, though, and turned them into these powerful machines. Do you think there's a potential threat to Intel from ARM down the line, where a company like Qualcomm, for example, which has done exceptionally well in smartphone chips, manages to produce something similar to the M1 chips that Apple's produced that are sold onto the Dells and HPs of this world? I mean, is that a conceivable threat at some point?
Very long term, maybe. Maybe 10 years.
Why is that?
Not imminent. The problem is Qualcomm is not big enough and they're not rich enough to do that. And they don't have the IP to compete with AMD and Apple and Intel. The three big, you can say now, you would say that the three big chip manufacturers now. Although Apple's not that big because Apple makes silicon just for their devices.
Right.
So AMD and Intel make way more chips than Apple does. Because Apple's very American and Europe markets, and even in those markets, it's very small markets, actually. It's actually quite shocking how small their markets are. Again, it is growing in America, but again, compared to how many Dell and HP and Lenovo laptops get sold, Dell and HP, even Dell on its own, sells more laptops than Apple will make. So it's one of those things where it's difficult for Qualcomm then to also do up against, they have to then work with Microsoft. Because now you have to completely redo the operating system. Again, Apple has advantage of we own our own operating system. So it's easy for us to optimize that.
Yeah.
But Qualcomm doesn't. So now they have to work with Microsoft.
Microsoft has released Windows on ARM. I mean, you can get Windows 11 and Windows 10 for ARM devices.
It's not as good as Apple, though.
No.
That's my problem. It's Windows, you are fighting with an operating system that's not just integration. Microsoft has been in bed with the x86 architecture for decades.
Yeah.
It's difficult to change. If you want to you can't just take the operating system as is and just say, we're going to port it over.
Right.
Again, Apple's a software company. They had to work their asses off to get their version of Apple Mac software operating system. Wow, what is the new version even called? I can't even remember.
Mac OS, yeah.
Yeah, but to get that to work on an ARM chip and so forth, on desktop. So a lot of those things, I presume they learned a lot from their mobile division.
Yeah.
So they probably took a lot of that and migrated that to that as well.
I'm sure.
There's different, and that's the advantage, is because they have had that expertise and iteration time. Working with their own operating system on ARM for so many decades now, it's easy for them to move away.
Yeah.
You can't do that from Qualcomm and MediaTek. They can't do that. They don't have the expertise in that operating system field. And again, that's also one area where I complain about Microsoft. Microsoft should have sooner started, even if it was crap, just start with something and build from it. Because now Microsoft is in a catch-up game, which is... it's going to take a while for Microsoft to catch up to Apple that's been doing this now. When did the first iPhone launch?
2007
or something like that.
Yeah.
So they've now had, I would say, a good 15 years of professional experience in making ARM work with their Apple OS.
And I think that integration Microsoft is absolutely pivotal. I mean,
so that's the main problem there.
So you're right. The software engineering teams at Apple are amazing. I mean, the software that isn't designed for M1, that the software is written for Intel, the Intel processors on these on the old Macs, runs amazingly using the Rosetta software.
As soon as it's done properly and so forth, it works. It does need a lot of work from the actual developer as well.
They must have done an incredible amount of work. Yeah,
I would say, again, to Apple's kudos, it's difficult, but not as difficult as most people think it is. It's just, it costs more money now because you have to get people to do it and so forth.
Right.
I've heard some complaints with it because I think our viewers can also watch it from François Pornell. We'll link his YouTube channel and so forth on there. He had a nice actual critique of Apple's silicon and why it is good, where it's good at.
Yeah.
Because Apple, again, you can say there's cheating on their side, but it's intelligent cheating.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're playing to the advantage of current software. Where you'll start to see, and that's, I presume, where I think we'll see with AMD probably being there first. Intel will also push that hard as well in the next coming years. We will see a massive uptick in accelerators. Everything will become accelerated. Every chip will have many different accelerators on there, and they all specifically do one thing and one thing alone. That type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's coming. I think the big tech that we're working from both AMD and Intel still, which they have spent stupid amount of money on as well.
Yeah.
We are going to start seeing CPUs where they're going to start taking over. We've seen hints of it with Intel's what did they call it now? Their scheduler and so forth. Thread directing.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, the current implementation, in my opinion, is pretty dumb. But we will definitely see a drastic evolution of that where the chip, you just program, you take your code and you put it in, and the chip itself will know where to accelerate what and where to take what. You, as the person that programs the code, do not need to optimize.
Mm-hmm.
You just write your code. The chip does all the optimization for you. Because most, like AMD and Intel, have learned the software guys struggle deeply with optimizing their stuff for the chips.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming more and more of a problem. Apple also has this problem. You can see that purely with Rosetta, getting them to program it for the chip. Again, now they've also have their own like advanced. That's what Rosetta's doing, is it's literally taking a chip and then using basically, it's easy to describe, accelerating tasks that were done on the x86 and just accelerating it. And then you just need to now assemble your code in such a way where that accelerator understands the code, and then you can say, sweet, we can quickly emulate it and then massively throw that onto our now new core architecture. And that thing will handle all that distribution and then put it back as it needs to be. So we'll see massive advantages. I know there was a big company in, I think, where was that now? I think, not Ireland.
That does what? Israel, yeah, yes.
Israel. There was a company there that pioneered tech where it could multitask anything. You can give it a single threaded application. It would take that single threaded application and it will multitask it for you. So even you as a programmer would program something for a single thread. That application then on the hardware level. So there's no actual software. It's the firmware that decodes that single, basically, you're coding for a single core, and it automatically multi-threads it for you.
Mm.
And it was stupid, stunning thing, like a 30, 40, 50, 70% in performance improvements. And there's no user intervention required. The hardware does it for you. So
amazing.
We'll see that becoming more and more prevalent as that comes. So I hope to see that. I was expecting that to come sooner, but I can see already there's a lot of problems and compatibility issues that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when we do our Microsoft one, there's a smart reason why Microsoft went and said 8th gen and up only.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a bigger cut coming as well. So
bigger cut coming.
People, it's like, oh yes, no, there's a bigger cut coming. We are getting to a point where we're going to have to say goodbye old software, goodbye old hardware, no longer supported at all. Our CPU fundamentally cannot run your old software. That's also coming, which should have happened sooner, in my opinion. If you leave something too long like that, then you're going to have people complaining that it's always been like that. Why do you need to change? And it's like, we need to change because we want stuff to be 70% faster.
And more secure, if you can get Microsoft.
Security plays also, again, security is a big problem for both AMD and Intel with all the
Yeah.
The scheduler freaking issues that they had with Spectre Meltdown and
yes.
all those iterations and so forth. And again, there's other, you can, it does help Intel more saying 8th gen and up only, because then all the old chips can say, we don't have to bother about security anymore about them. So goodbye, good luck, and hopefully you don't put your machine on the internet. That type of attitude. But I think there is a bigger
thing DOS.
To happen.
Yeah, just go back to DOS. Yeah. You don't need any of this modern Windows internet stuff.
Oh, well, DOS even had viruses, so.
True.
If there is a way, there is a way to do it.
Yeah.
If there's a how or there's a way, then you're going to get screwed. If your machine is connected to the internet, yeah, make sure your antivirus is up to date and all that jazz, because someone's always out there to get you.
Yeah, for
sure. Some Nigerian prince or some other dude, some Russian or Chinese guy there, Indian. We've seen some of those farms where they have freaking call centers and so forth. Ah, it's just disgusting, actually.
Anyway, let's get on to our last topic on Intel. And I'm quite interested to get your views on this, because Intel has historically built these big fabrication plants for their own needs. They've it's made sense. They've made millions and millions of chips, and they need these big plants. They haven't gone the AMD, TSMC contract manufacturing approach at all historically. Along comes Pat Gelsinger, and they're turning that on its head, and they're saying, well, actually, we're going to consider this now. We're going to actually start to make chips for other companies. How big of a pivot is this, and why is it significant?
Well, for Intel, it's a bit of a big shift, because normally everything is – the problem with internal designs is you can hide a lot of the stuff, because the problem is with Intel, you work with Intel inside. Mm. Now, as soon as you're outside company, so this is, I think, the problems they're going to hit into. So let's first discuss why they do this. First of all, they're doing this because they need to pay these factories off.
Right.
And I think Intel knows in the short term, it's going to be difficult for them to compete with AMD. So if they build all of these factories, they're going to have excess manufacturing capability.
Mm-hmm.
And a fab not in use is a very expensive elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can't afford that. Intel mm-hmm. doesn't have long term doesn't have the money for that. So they have to open it kind of up now. Now that they have all those fabrications and they're making all these plants open, when they're all open, you still have the ones that you're currently operating. Mm-hmm. So I presume it's more of a, because we're now scaling so high with manufacturing, we need to make sure that if we can't maximally utilize all of these fabs, we can at least mm-hmm. then start selling it out and saying, mm-hmm. sweet, other companies can come in, make their own designs, we'll fab it for you, and then sell it to you. Problem is that's very easy to say. That's one of the areas where a lot of people don't understand TSMC's biggest advantages there is their whole method of how easy they've made it, where you can come to them, you buy your package with them, they have engineers there that help you out and you help them. Mm. So there's a very cooperative thing.
Mm.
Intel isn't used to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to take some of a bit of
culture
smoothing
shift.
Out and some butter in some areas, because I think a lot of the engineers are also not going to be used to that, where they were usually used to, here's our chip, use how we do it, there you go, done. If you're not making chips for someone else, you need to deal with their special needs.
Mm.
And now my problem is with now NVIDIA saying, oh, we can make chips, but I'm like, oh my word, that is not, you are falling into a big trap there. It's a nice company because they make you money. But you're going to hate working with them, because everyone else has with NVIDIA. Because NVIDIA is very quick to turn around and say, oh, no, it's the manufacturer's fault.
Yeah.
Very quick. They blame Samsung. They blame TSMC. As soon as something goes wrong, you get blamed. It's not them. Yeah. They didn't do anything wrong. It's you.
Mm.
So that's why I'm like, it was very arrogant, very quick from freaking NVIDIA to say, oh, no, we're going to go to Intel. And it's like, I'm like, oof, okay. Like, geez, not the first company I would take. I would rather take someone like IBM or something like that. And that also tells you that most of those other companies also too afraid to go to Intel yet. Mm-hmm. Because again, what record does, if you now would go, would you really now go to Intel and say, I want to manufacture with Intel, knowing that Intel can't even struggles to manufacture their own stuff at the quality? What's the incentive of you now going to them? They can't even get their own stuff done.
If no one else has capacity. If no one else has capacity, I suppose.
Now you can say it's a capacity problem. But the problem is those factories are still only getting built. So it's going to take them still at least 4 or 5 years before those factories are online. And trust me, in 4 or 5 years, a lot of things can change.
Yeah.
So,
well, TSMC is building more fabs too. So it's not like anyone's slowing down.
Future. So I think for our viewers for now, yes, it is it's a good thing, but I think let's give it another 3 years and then we'll evaluate it and see what would happen and all that jazz. Because now it's a bit too soon yet to say, oh, what can it do and so forth. Because at the moment, if you look at their track record, they're not good at manufacturing. They've not met their targets. The yield quality is terrible. So it's like, oof, if you're another company, no one is interested. And the fact that NVIDIA's the first company to say, oh, no, we'll go to him, like, dudes, do you not know the problems they've had? I'm like, okay, well, that's nice. Maybe in 5 years, maybe it's fixed then. Cool.
Yeah.
But it's a bit too soon now to say, yes, Intel's going to make.
Why did NVIDIA rush out to say that?
I have no idea. Honestly, that it's a very puzzling thing where it's like, I don't know if it's just something where it's like, oh, no, we're trying media hype or something like that because.
Well, they're trying to stick it to one of their competitors in some
probably.
Way.
They're probably trying to stick it to TSMC. AMD. And I think it's straight to TSMC and saying, we can go to Intel.
Right.
Make sure our pricing is cheaper.
Right. Negotiating tactic.
And I think I presume they just went and said, because you cannot fight against TSMC. We've seen that because Intel's paying through their stupidness to get to TSMC now. Multiple billions. And I can tell you, I would not be surprised if 10 to maybe 50 million of that is just, yes, you remember those days when we made 16 nanometer and 22 nanometer days. You came and publicly bashed our company saying how we are. Now you're going to pay, bastard. I would not be surprised because they also know that. And they can be because where else are you going to go for the latest, highest end manufacturing capability? You're not going to go to Samsung. You're not going to go to IBM because IBM sold all of their manufacturing off to GlobalFoundries. So what? You're going to go to Intel. Good luck with that one.
Yeah. Samsung is the dark horse always, but they seem to be having a lot of trouble actually at the moment.
Yes, no, they do have Samsung has the potential. I think it's just management there needs a bit of a slap because that's, I think, where their main problem is. Their management is just not done because they have potential.
Yeah.
I think they should, my personal opinion, they should get more IBM engineers, especially the old school guys that are good at that level, chemical engineering and atomic research and all that type of jazz. They need more field experts in those areas because Samsung has the main problem with Samsung there with manufacturing is their manufacturing is mainly used to make phones and portable devices and toasters and microwaves and ovens and simple things. So there's no need to get a 7-nanometer manufacturing node for your microwave or your oven or your car. There is no motivation for it. So that's the problem. So,
but they're quite big in memory chips. I mean, they make a lot of memory chips. Yes, I think that's their bread and butter.
They are massive with memory. Even with chip manufacturing, they're massive because anything that's a Samsung electronics has a Samsung chip that has a Samsung controller in there that's designed and manufactured by Samsung. So they ship not very complicated chips, though, but they ship a heck of a lot of tons of those.
Yeah.
So their manufacturing capability in terms of making cheap stuff is stupid. So that's the main problem. I think in their management there is a lot of their management goes there. Why should we spend all of this high-end money and all this stuff for like 10% of the things that we make? Our 90% of our business is in the cheap stuff where we make decent money, we pay the bills, all those type of things, we're happy. So you see, you're dealing with that management phase where they're like, they want to do the effort. And that's, I think, Samsung's biggest problem. So they don't have that passion to go for it. Whereas TSMC, you can see even when old man, what was his name? He retired. He was stupidly passionate about making great stuff, making chips better, making them fast and all this jazz. Even though it's a small market of this, I think it's the high-end market is only like 30% of their market cap in terms of how much they make profit from. but they're still passionate about it and they go for it and you can see the enthusiasm. Even in a guy that's like 86 years old, I think it's his age or something like that. He's old. The CEO that just now stepped down, I think this year or last year he stepped down.
I don't know him. Yeah, yeah.
So that, yeah. But you can
see. The founder, he founded it.
Yeah, exactly. You can see the passion for making chips. That passion in Samsung needs that passion to make high-tech chips.
This is Samsung's fabrication plant or plants in Seoul, South Korea. Just look at the size of those things compared to those massive apartment blocks that you can see in the foreground.
It's stupid, dude. I thought it was like the amount of money you need just to make one of those factories would bankrupt most companies.
That's
how big it costs to make. And then it's like, then you just built the factory. Then you still need to pay for all the water and the electricity and all the people that work there and all their insurance and their life insurance and all those things that will cost you even more stupid money. So I think that's why these fabs are so expensive. It's just not just the building itself is a finicky bastard because it's massive clean rooms that you need to build that need to be maintained and they also fickle bastards.
Then scale the is amazing. Absolutely
the
amazing
machining scale. Inside that you need to have for all those little wafer carrier transit things that do rail and go through and get manufactured because you've got your boxes with your wafers in them. I know there's some good videos from GlobalFoundries where they actually go into a factory where you can see how they actually make the stuff kind of. You can see how they actually use the wafer going from its actual transport box into the lithography machine, gets burnt, goes back into the machine, gets packed up, goes into the next place, gets cut into little pieces and all that jazz and how they get picked. And when they go into the actual freaking, it's a picker that actually picks them into like it's a big rail machine like this, like a film type of thing. They put them into, and then they, from there they can put them on, test them, and so forth. So the amount of labor and in UV protection, so it's like even building the factory alone, just building the building is a massive achievement. Then the stuff that goes inside is even more of an achievement in terms of logistics, in terms of how, where's the machines, how you put the machines in, where are they, where are the engineers, all that type of jazz. So
this really is one of the most complex, highly capital-intensive businesses there is, if not the most. I mean, it's unbelievable the complexity in this, but also the amount of money that you have to spend.
Which is good. I thought spending money is always good.
Right.
Everybody wins when people spend money. And the more money they spend, the more they benefit, because the more you spend, the more tax the governments get, and then government gets more money, so that can goes for other things. They need the demand for high trained people, so in terms of universities and all those things. Again, that's when you, I thought it was like, when we talk just in terms of where the actual fabbing machines are a bit on short supply due to them all coming from ASML, the other shortage is just people.
Mm-hmm.
Like even TSMC that's engineers. Making our factories in America and so forth, they are shipping their own people into America. To help them out and then for them to train people to work with those factories. So there's all, even they admit it, there is a shortage. We need more chemical engineers. There isn't enough at the moment. So I thought it was like, so that's, and that would now motivate, especially in America now, if they do have those more of those factories in America, to have more people in those fields coming into those fields. So it's a good thing when big companies spend big money, if in the right places. Because in this field, you have to, again, if you have to build a factory, so you need to buy land, which again, governments make money from. Then you have to build a factory. So all the building expertise guys, they need engineers. They need people. You need builders. You need all the machinery to move all of that stuff. That needs your own people and stuff that need to be built. So it's that whole field there just to build the factory employs so many people and push so much money into other industries. It makes it a lot better than I prefer these type of fields and spending money instead of digital. Digital is a very high profit to singular company. The only people that really profit from it is the people that provide the internet, people that provide your UU bandwidth, and the people that provide your hardware to use the device. That's it. You don't really see massive scale of people getting employed in that area. Not in terms of what it takes to build a factory.
Yeah.
And the money, that's why it costs you multiple billions to make a factory.
Yeah. Which makes it all the more amazing that you can buy one of these little chips, which is the most advanced thing human beings have ever created, for a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I thought it was like, that's the magic in it. It's like, here's this little chip there, and that little chip, if you go into it hardcore and so forth, that little chip is so advanced that that chip can guess what you're going to do before you're going to do it.
And that's what this podcast is all about. But I've got one final question for you before we let me just put this on the screen before we call it wraps on this Intel double special. This man, Mr. Pat Gelsinger, is the man in the hot seat. He's been there for about a year or so. Gerard, given his track record so far, and I know it's early days, but given his track record so far and what you know about the man and his history, what chances would you give him of turning the good ship Intel around?
I would say pretty good. He is competent enough. He's enthusiast. So I would say out of everyone they had to choose from what I've seen that they had to choose, he was probably the best pick.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Out of the, because they didn't have a lot of people to pick from, because a lot of people were left and so forth.
Yeah.
Like, unless you could get some of the old guys from retirement, but a lot of them are like, this is a stressful job already.
Yeah.
Now having to fix the ship and then recover the ship and then improve the ship, that's a big ask.
It's a big
that's
job.
Like, it's like basically going back to where Lisa Su was when were handed the CEO.
AMDC, like,
the ship is now at least it's floatable. It's floating. Now you need to make sure it freaking goes like stonk. And she did it. So credit to her. But now he needs to kind of emulate that type of thing for Intel.
Yeah.
So, and I think they've employed the right people. They have, I would say, if they could have hold on to some of the other old guys, it would have been nicer, but I think a lot of them just said they over. But Intel has a good chance. I'm really looking forward. We'll see with 14th gen. 14th gen is the thing where I'm going to start critiquing Pat. Now he's just freaking steering the ship that he was given. So he now 14th, still needs to make the he still 14th needs to gen make the ship his ship.
Yeah. Now 14th gen will tell us a lot.
Now 14th gen is when we're gonna start really critiquing Intel, saying where are they going? Yeah. How far are they going? Hopefully their philosophy in chip design has changed. Because I don't see the current philosophy really taking off.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this discussion as much as I have. It's always fascinating chatting to you, Gerard, and getting insights into the semiconductor industry and everything else that's happening in the world of PCs. We'd love to hear your feedback. I promised last week that I'd create an email address for the show, but I still haven't done that. So you can just mail us our individual addresses. If you think we're talking absolute crap, tell us that. We don't mind. If you've got any positive feedback, we'd love to hear that as well.
Yes. No, I admit I can be wrong. It happens. We can make a special episode where we can fix our corrections and all that type of jazz.
We'll do a corrections episode at the end of a couple of seasons of this. But we'd love to hear your feedback. We haven't put any of the shows out yet. This is the fourth one in the bag, but we're going to have to publish these soon. The videographer's busy with the edits, and I look forward to seeing the fruits of that labor. And can't wait for this to get out in front of the audiences, because I think the show is going to get some good traction. But if you do want to drop us a mail, Gerard P, that's GERHARDP for Pretorius at Computers Only, which is where he works, .co.za, or you can mail me, or mail me, at Duncan@techcentral.co.za, and let us know your thoughts. If you want to subscribe to the show, we will be making it available. It will be available by the time you hear this on YouTube and on most of the podcatching application, whichever podcatcher you happen to use, be it Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Pocket Casts or any of the others that are out there.
Insert cast just, here.
Just search for everything PC, two words in your favorite podcatcher, and I'm sure it will come up. But next time we're going to be talking about, what did you call them last time? The big green goblin.
Goblin. The goblins. Yes.
We're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about NVIDIA, I do get the impression from these first four episodes that you're not the biggest fan of the company.
I'm very critical of them.
I'm looking forward to you.
Yeah.
Looking forward to your take on them. Yeah,
it's going to be a good one.
I was actually looking at their new RTX 3090 Ti graphics card, which they announced recently, and I saw some online pricing this morning. And I saw someone retailing it for 62,000 Rand, and I thought, good grief, who's been buy that?
Yes, now, we were under NDA and everything for that, because we got pricing in January for those things.
Oh, did you?
And they were 78,000 Rand then in Jan, and then the delays happened and blah, 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 and now they're coming out, and it's like, yeah, they're out, but they're not out in South Africa. And I think it was stupid, man. It's like we were getting like 5 units for the whole country. I'm like,
because no one's going to buy this thing. The generation 4000 series is coming.
Duncan, you'll be surprised.
Have you sold one? Really? Have you sold one yet?
I've had customers that were interested.
Okay.
And then they bought 3090s from me. The TIs though. So I'll see when we actually get them and see what the price will be when they actually land in the country. Because I tell people, it's like sometimes you get told these pricing from people, and it's like, oh, we're going to bring it from non brands. Again, I can't blame them. Mm-hmm. You don't know what the rand dollar will be, shipping costs, all the jazz. So normally I tell people, give a roundabout figure and then we'll work with that. But hell, it's just one hot card and one powerful card.
One expensive card. It's 61,995 Rand, I think, was the retail price I saw this morning for the 3090. And it's not even that, it's not even much faster than the 3090, which is 20 grand less.
No. So yes, this is purely for those 1% people.
Yeah. For sure. But we're going to unpack NVIDIA in all its glory next week. We'll be talking a little bit about the history of the company, but I'm probably focusing more on it'll probably be a one-episode show, NVIDIA. But just looking at the company's origins and how it's expanded out of its origins as a graphics card company and doing some other stuff and giving Intel and other companies a run for their money in some respects.
Yeah.
So really looking forward to that. But until then, from Gerard and myself, Duncan, until next time, happy computing.